Studio in New York City, Cheesehead TV brings you two guys who like to think they know something about football.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome back to Packer Transplants Live. I am Aaron Nagler, and with me, as always, is Mr. Corey Banky, my partner here at Cheesehead TV. We're joined in our live chat by the best and the brightest and some others from around the Packers blogosphere, including our own Jamie Snowden. But right now, Corey, why don't you tell us what is on tap tonight?
Joining us later tonight is no one.
Nobody.
Where's
joins
my script?
Us.
I need a script, people.
Anytime tonight.
Hey, good evening, and what? Oh, that's your line. Later tonight, we're going to talk about 5-0, the only thing that matters in this world.
Woo!
Okay.
Yeah, baby.
But right now, it's time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. We got the good. We got Clay Matthews,
absolute Tasmanian devil on the defensive side of the ball.
Ha ha, Clinton Dix.
Playing well near the line, playing well in center field, just playing well.
Dayton Jones.
With a block, field goal, and a sack. Quite a day for Dayton.
And we got the bad. We got wide receivers' lack of separation.
Not great on the outside. Aaron Rodgers keeps alluding to it. Not good, guys.
And we got the ugly, Richard Rodgers.
I mean, I feel bad putting the kid in the ugly, seeing as he, you know, he had some good snaps on the day, obviously, but there were a number of errors that were very costly during the Rams game that, I'm sorry, Richard, buddy, I love you, and I'm a big fan, but had to put you in the ugly this week. So there you go. Corey, how the hell are you tonight?
I'm good.
I think it's time to grab a Wisco Disco beer and thank our friends at Stillmank for providing us with the nectar of the gods. Let me tell you, Wisco Disco is the bomb. If you haven't tried it yet, it's probably not in Wisconsin. Northeast Wisconsin, to be precise. But if and when you get there, make sure you head over to Stillmank. Check out that old internet thing. You can find them there. You can find them on the Google machine. Go to their distillery. Have some Wisco Disco. Tell Brad we say hello, because holy cow, this stuff is the best.
It is.
Should I talk some more, or are you doing more technical things?
Well, if you would like to win a Cheesehead TV poster.
Come on now.
Last week we had a winner. The week before we had a winner. Every week there's a winner. We need you to tweet, I'm watching Packer Transplants on at Cheesehead TV, sponsored by at Wisco Disco Beer.
Got to do it, people.
Do it.
There it is. You see it on the screen right there. Right there in front of you. On the bottom. Like right there, you see it. Right there. Do it. Tweet it out. You could win that awesome Green Bay Legends poster. It's fantastic stuff. You know you want it. Do it, people. I want to see some tweets. And I want to see more Wisco Discos at Lambeau Field, because last Sunday was awesome, people. I got to say, my feed blew up with Wisco Disco pictures at Lambeau Field. Absolutely loving it. Saw a bunch more throughout the week. I have expressed it before. I don't think I've done it and adequately. I don't think I'll ever do an adequate job, but I cannot express how much I love seeing pictures of Wisco Disco in my Twitter feed. It makes my day. It makes my week. It's absolutely lovely. Keep it up, people, because I love it. And I know Corey loves it, too.
I love it.
So what do you think? Time to get some news?
News.
Some Packers news? And there's a bunch today, so hold on to your hats. Let's get through this here. First off, some sad news, some bad news, some news nobody likes to hear, but the Packers put Sean Richardson on the injured reserve today. Obviously, I think most people here watching or listening later on the podcast know the news in regards to the reports about Richardson's injury. Another neck injury. The guy waited so long to get back from a first neck injury. Now on injury reserve, you have to think after reading Tom Silverstein's piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that this will be it for Sean Richardson. Of course, on the Packers side of the ball, they did guarantee the guy $3 million this year. So, you know, at least he got a little something before, you know, going and being put on IR and probably having his career ended. And let me just point out, you know, this summer when he signed the offer sheet with Oakland, I know there were some Packer fans, and they are, like, pretty much the, you know, the knuckle-dragging version. But there are Packer fans out there who go, oh, he's a traitor. Why would he do that? Why would he want to go? And this is a perfect example of why. You want to maximize your value. You want to maximize your earning potential while you can, because every play, every single time you step on the football field, the next play could be the last time you ever play football.
Yep.
And that happened to Sean Richardson right after he signed this deal with the Packers. So I'm glad he got a little bit of a financial push on his way out the door of the National Football League. Next up, we got Justin Perillo in a corresponding move being promoted from the practice squad to the 53-man roster. I'm excited about this. I know Richard Rodgers has been playing well, but you know, you have to look at the tight end position and the fact that they haven't used a whole lot of two tight end sets for obvious reasons, and haven't been quite as kind of multiple as maybe they'd like to be, and maybe Perillo helps them in that regard, although I tend to think for at least the first week prior to the bye, they probably don't throw him into the mix too much. But I'm excited to see what he can do if and when he gets the chance. Next up, we have Nick Perry, who is most, I guess, furthest away, how you want to say it, how Coach put it today, from playing on Sunday. There were a lot of guys injured off of Sunday's game and trying to get back from injury prior to Sunday's game. And McCarthy indicated this afternoon that Nick Perry probably has the furthest to go. So I wouldn't expect to see him out there against the Chargers. I mean, that just stinks for the guy who was playing very well, had another sack on Sunday after a two-sack performance the week before. You hate it. You hate to see this guy injured yet again. Obviously, he's got a long history there, but you hope, you know, for whatever it takes to get him back out there, hopefully the bye week does it, and we see him in Denver following. Next up, and finally, in news, we have the other guys who McCarthy talked about being injured. We've got Burnett, we got Lang, we got Adams, and Raji all having a chance to play on Sunday. Now, obviously, I think we all agree that it's great to have these guys on the field. It's great if they can, you know, get back and contribute. And I know instantly what people are going to say, what fans are going to say is, oh, you know, they should rest them. Should rest them because the bye week is coming and then you give 2 weeks rest. And, you know, I used to think that, but I've come around to what Mike is selling. I'm buying what Mike is selling on this one, which is like, look, they're football players, and if they're good enough to go out there and play and contribute, they go out and play and contribute.
Yep.
You know, and I know, I understand there is such a thing as rushing a guy back too fast. I think we saw that with Davante Adams against the Chiefs. Guy had three whole snaps before he was on the shelf again. But, you know, it's an individual call, I think, between, well, not individual, but like it's a case-by-case basis in regards to each guy, talking with the coaching staff, talking with the medical staff. Trust me, I want everybody to be as healthy as possible for the stretch run, but you got to win football games, and you win football games with your best players on the field. So definitely want to see those guys come back. I know TJ Lang today at his locker really seemed to indicate that he would be out there. So here's hoping that, you know, we get these guys on the field, healthy, get out of there, and get to the bye week. Although it was funny hearing Mike at the podium today talk about the bye week and say, you know, I don't want to hear about airline reservations. And look, just this is our job right now, beating the Chargers. And they are an uncommon opponent. They're not a team that they face a whole lot. So, you know, there's a lot of work to do. So I don't want to hear about guys talking about, oh, am I going to get out Monday? Am I going to get out Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
Look, you're going to get out. Just beat the Chargers first, and then we'll deal with that. You have the means. You have, like, the support system to help you in that regard. Just let's focus on the task at hand.
I mean, I feel like the one thing about this team so far that you've seen is there is an edge to this team that I'm actually not worried about lapsing. And it's funny watching Inside the NFL, the NFL Films highlight that, you know, they actually spent more than 2 minutes on the Packers. Thank you, NFL Films. appreciate that. It was very fascinating to see Sam Shields, see, you know, they had the mic'd up stuff this week.
Right.
And there's an edge You see it with Shields. You see it with the defense. You see it with the young guys. There's a lot of guys on this team that have never won anything.
Yes.
That are playing at a really high level.
Yeah.
And they don't know what it's like to even be in the playoffs. Ty Montgomery has no idea what it's like to play in the playoffs. He's playing like it.
Yep.
So that, I'm not too worried about that in the bye. That's one thing
right.
that I don't think I'm worried about in this team. It's funny because as soon as something drops on this team right now, as
I'm just
waiting,
right?
As soon as something drops, something else comes. Like last week, right?
Yep.
Everybody's like, oh, where's the offense? The offense drops out. Everybody has all this bullshit about, oh, we don't have a deep ball. Everybody who talks about the whole deep ball thing,
we'll get there.
Go away.
Well, let's get there right now. Away. Let's move to the offense. Let's move to the offense because that, Mr. Behnke. That highlights our offensive section. That's our segue right there. Let me just say this about the whole rigmarole being made about the deep ball. And I said this on Bill Michaels' show today.
BS.
So for those of you who listen to that, you'll already know what I'm about to say. But, I mean, okay. I understand the concern. I understand the pointing to it. But to say that the team is in trouble because it doesn't have a deep threat and or a deep passing game, I'm sorry, you just I just don't understand how you can watch the Patriots win a Super Bowl the way they did and then turn around and say the Packers have to develop a deep ball.
There are plenty of teams in the NFL in the last 20 years that have no deep ball for their offense. Zero. That have right. won big games and won them right. dominantly.
Well, and here's my thing, though.
It's a nitpick.
It's fine. Like, I understand that. You know, they're going to have to run teams out of two-man, and they're going to have to win when they get the box stacked. And we've seen both over the course of the last 2 weeks. The 49ers played a lot of two-man. The Rams did a little bit more of dropping a safety into the box and forcing them to win outside, which they couldn't. And, you know, Rodgers alluded to that, both after the game and again today at his locker. But they also couldn't win in the running game when there were two high safeties, not just when they dropped a guy down. And I know it's like kind of what the team has been saying is like, oh, well, you know, they're stacking the box. Well, no, they are. There are those snaps. But I can show you plenty of snaps with two high safeties where Aaron makes the correct check. We're going to run the ball. And the offensive line is just not winning.
Yeah.
It's just not happening, especially on the stretch play, which has been like kind of the bread and butter. They've made a lot of hay with that over the last couple of years. And for whatever reason, right now, maybe it's the defensive fronts they've faced. We saw that last year early on. They played some tough D's, and kind of you have to think with Seattle and the Rams, etc. Yeah, we're kind of facing that again. But, you know, they are not moving people. They're moving backwards.
Yeah.
And inherently in a zone scheme, your first step is backwards to create an angle to get leverage, etc. But they're not, they're just moving back into the, and there's no cutback lane, and there's all the things they need to happen aren't happening, and this is with too high. And when they do drop down the safety, forget it. I mean, every once in a while a cutback lane opens up and Eddie or James hits it, and that's great and it looks wonderful and we all get excited, but consistently against even a seven-man front, they are not winning up front. And to me, more than anything else, more than the deep ball stuff, more than who's going to win outside, more than what, you know, they're doubling Randall Cobb, more than all of that, they got to start winning that matchup. They have to start making it work up front. When Aaron checks to the run, when there's a run called and they have to run it, whether it's a seven-man front, whether it's an eight-man front, I don't care. They have to start making that work. Because until they do, you're going to continue to see this offense go about its business kind of like we've seen the last couple weeks, where fits and starts, you know, the defense is just going to press guys on the outside and make them beat them. And until, you know, you start making them pay with the running game, it's just going to be more of the same.
Yeah.
Speaking of the offensive line, it was interesting to me that, you know, Walker, who we heard a lot about in the preseason, they came in and played a little tackle, which scared the hell out of me in the preseason. Although, you know, he kind of held his own. He wasn't great, but he kind of held his own. He was the first off the bench to get the call at right guard when T.J. Lang went down. And I will say, he was taken aback by Mr. Aaron Donald on the first snap that he played. He had a very big welcome to the NFL moment on that first snap, because you could see, if you go back and watch the play, his first snap of the game after T.J. gets hurt, he extends his arms to kind of, you know, punch Donald. Like, you're taught, you punch the guy. And I mean, Donald is around him in a flash. I mean, like, he couldn't have blinked and Donald was gone. And it was, and you saw, he almost does a double take on the tape. Like, he goes, where did he go? Like, it was that quick. And it was that moment of, oh, okay. Like, and then for whatever reason, and no one's kind of reported on this, I've kind of looked, and, you know, guys, if you're on the chat and you've seen writing on this, maybe let me know or tweet me or whatever, because I haven't. But then Barclay was in, you know, and you thought, oh, okay, so the coaches didn't like what they saw. But then they put Walker back in, and then the second time around, Walker played really well. Like, I was shocked, and he kind of struggled the exact same way Lang was and everybody else in the offensive line was in regards to the running game. But in the passing game, he played really well, and he was going against Aaron Donald and Brockers and these really good defensive linemen for St. Louis, and he was more than holding his own. So, I mean, it's very early. It's trial by fire, but I tell you what, Packers fans, it makes you breathe a little easier knowing that the guy can be inserted against arguably the best defensive line in the game, and he more than holds his own. I mean, that can, you know, help you sleep a little bit at night, knowing that if, you know, either one of those guys to go Sitton or Lang go down, all right, we have a guy who can at least step in and keep the offense operating. Because we all saw last year when Lane Taylor came in, and down in New Orleans, and things just fell apart along the offensive line. So, I mean, again, it's early, it's a very small sample size. I understand all that, but you look at the tape, you look at the competition he was facing, it's promising. It's very promising.
Speaking of Sitton and Lang, I saw this movie they were in called Pitch Perfect 2.
You finally saw it?
Wow, they were terrible. Okay.
Oh, no.
That was bad. Mm-hmm. Like, I was all excited. It was like, and now the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, no.
And there were a lot of good act. There was a lot of good acting in it.
Yeah.
None of it was coming from the direction of the Green Bay Packers. Oh, no.
You realize we want to book these guys again.
Like the guy who played,
it'll never happen.
The guy who played Key and Peele, the guy who's in Key and Peele, he was brilliant. Mr. Show guy was brilliant. Like it was funny.
Yeah.
And then Clay comes up, and I was just
oh no. Oh no.
And then there was this one shot of I think it was Sitton, and like he's I don't know, it's like it's a bad moment.
Is Sitton in it?
No, maybe it's Lang. I mean, it's Lang.
Lang's, guy,
yeah,
Lang's
the,
in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lang's in it, and
Bakhtiari's in
Bakhtiari.
It. Yeah, Bakhtiari's in it. And Barclay.
Barclay and
Barclay,
Jordan Rodgers.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
It's terrible.
It's not good, huh? Because I still haven't seen it. I'll let Bakhtiari know once he... You know, speaking of David Bakhtiari, let me address something here for a second. All right. You know, we have a little mom-and-pop program here that we do for our friends and family and our Packer fans around the world here every week, and... You know, we've had David on several times. He's been on before. He was on twice last year. He was on once this offseason. I mean, he's a friend of the show. I consider him a friend of the show. And all he's done all season is talk about how I got too big time because I haven't invited him on the show. You know, and it's like, I can't invite you on every week, David. You know, this comes and goes.
I don't know. That kind of has a ring to it. Packer transplants with David back to
you. You would think it would. And I thought that was kind of a cool idea as well. Until someone signed a contract with Gannett to do their show. So, you know, I don't see how I'm getting too big time when someone else has a movie and then is the co-hosting, like, what? Let's call them, you know, a rival show.
A rival show.
You know, gonna go and co-host that show, and then we're gonna just invite you on. I mean, I don't know, David. I don't know how it works in the big world of Hollywood, because obviously that's where you're at, and that's we don't know anything about that. But you know, and you're like, you know, small town America over here, called New York City.
I was about to say,
that's just not how it works. You know, we thought we had a bond. We thought we had a friendship, and you just, you know, cast us aside, man. So, you know, you're welcome on the program anytime. You have the number. You can call us whenever you want. But I mean, you could call now.
I don't have Skype on.
Oh well, you could call us whenever Skype is on. But you know, I'm just saying. And you haven't even played me at FIFA again. I mean, it's just, you know, you used to. You used to. Yep, a lot of talk.
It's all talk.
A lot of talk.
You know who's not talk?
Who's that?
Ty Montgomery.
This is true. This kid is busting out, dude. I mean, biggest yardage total of the year so far last Sunday. He's caught touchdowns in his last two games. You know, not saying he's Wally Pippen, Devontae Adams or anything, because Rodgers has made it very clear that he needs and wants Devontae Adams back. But, you know, he's playing well, and he's making the most of his opportunities, and you love to see that from the rookie. My favorite play of the whole day yesterday, and I know he stepped out of bounds, and he should have stayed in bounds. He was trying to score, et cetera, et cetera. At the end of the game, he caught a little smoke screen there, and he stiff-arms the defensive back, and he just throws him to the ground. It's just awesome. And there was one before in the game where he's heading out of bounds, and this guy's holding him. And with his left arm, he just throws him, and the guy goes tumbling down, and he just flips the ball to the ref and heads back to the puddle.
I mean, my opinion right now, Ty Montgomery has done enough for us to call his rookie season spectacularly successful.
That seems a bit much.
I'm sorry. Hyperbolic? No. And here's my argument, right? Here's my argument.
Lay it on me.
We were waiting all last season for one Devontae Adams, right? Mm-hmm. We were waiting.
Right.
Week 12, 13,
Patriots week.
Whatever week that was. Right. All of a sudden, boom, right? Yeah. The lights come on.
Yeah.
Ty Montgomery, on the other hand, we're like, okay, you know what? All we really want from Ty Montgomery this season is we want serviceable
kick returns,
right?
That's it. That's all we need.
If he catches a ball, awesome. If he blocks, does some
kind of Antonio Freeman rookie.
Nice.
You know what I mean? Like, return kicks, punts, whatever. And then whatever you do at receiver is just great.
I don't even know if I was expecting that, because when Antonio Freeman started his year and he was starting to run back, like, you knew there was something special, right?
Absolutely.
But you already knew he's in the mix.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
the
teams are game planning for Ty Montgomery.
Like, it's not a surprise anymore. Like, when he's
nobody was game
football.
Planning for Devontae Adams in week six, okay? Yeah, nope. The San Diego Chargers are game planning
for
Ty Montgomery.
They'll know where he is. There's no doubt about that. And, I mean, hell, he's obviously come in and learned the playbook and learned the checks and done what he needs to do. It is interesting to see Rodgers continue to talk about their inability to win outside. And you know they got old man Jones out there who is kind of the Anquan Boldin of the Midwest, in that he's almost always covered. Like, he hardly ever runs away from somebody. There's always a guy, like, right next to him. And Rodgers rarely likes to fit those in there. But he does it on those free plays, which is why he catches those touchdowns, etc. But you saw that touchdown against St. Louis. I mean, that's a great route. That is a great route. And that's a money throw from Rodgers. It is funny because Jones kind of double caught that one.
Yeah.
And it was kind of almost like old school James Jones. But, I mean, it's funny. Rodgers keeps referencing winning outside. And he keeps referencing Devontae Adams. He said it again today at his locker about, we need Devontae to get out there and win some one-on-ones outside. So I'm just saying, I hope that happens. Because the worst thing in the world for Devontae is to have sat out this time. Ty Montgomery gets out there and is productive. And then Devontae gets back and into the mix, and he can't win outside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's going to be bad. That's like, I don't want that. I don't want to see that. I want Devontae Adams to come in, and I want them to run some plays specifically designed to get him the ball quickly. Because I want to establish that right away. So Aaron has that thing where it's like, you don't know where he's going to go. I want to get back to those days of Favre had it, Rodgers has had it, where it's like 10, 11 guys catching footballs within the course of a game, where you just never know where the hell he's going to go. I want Ripkowski catching things out of the backfield. You know, that's the level I want to get to. And right now, they're just not very multiple. That's another thing people keep, you know, kind of missing on this whole, the offense is kind of like, yeah, we're back to that thing that Mike did last year at the beginning of the year where it's very static. Lots of three receiver sets. You always know where they're going to be. You always know how they're going to line up. You know, every once in a while they'll throw in some under center stuff or some two back stuff, and you know they haven't had the personnel to go too tight. So I understand that. But you know, start mixing it up. These guys know their stuff. They know what they're doing. Like, just let's mix it up.
Okay, I'm just going to take a little bit of issue with Rusty. He says,
"Oh dear, oh dear,
spectacularly successful." Is being among the league leaders. He's a little better than a pleasant surprise. Okay. Caveating, he's a rookie. So right. For a rookie, okay, 13 receptions, 125 yards, a 9.6 yard average, two touchdowns. In game six,
they played five games, actually.
Five games, that is successful. okay, I might have went to the edge a little bit with the spectacular leaf art. Might have went to the edge, but you know what?
Oh my god!
Let's take
I
that.
Am so close to starving.
That beer almost came
that.
Out my nose.
Let's take that. Okay, for 1 second, let's take that. Let's times it by three.
Let's rewind.
Right. 6 touchdowns, 39 receptions, 375 yards for a rookie.
I think it's more yards than that, but maybe not.
Yeah, I can't count.
I know.
Nobody
said there'd be math. But
that's a success.
It's success. It's not spectacularly successful, but but you know,
it's better than pleasantly. It's better than pleasant.
Yes, I agree. With that. There, I would agree. I'll say this. He looks better now than Adams did at this time last year. I will say that, which I think is kind of the point you're making.
Anthony Nash on the chat just says, but as a rookie wide receiver, look at some of the better ones were last year. OBJ, Landry, Watkins.
All first round picks, I believe.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Ty Montgomery.
Third round pick?
Yeah.
Expected just to be a kick returner? I'll take it.
That's the thing. Like,
I'll get it.
It's not like he was a number one wide receiver.
And all guys, let me see. Who did he list? OBJ went to the Giants, who desperately needed a wide receiver. The Bills traded up for Watkins in the top 10, desperately wanted him to make plays, and he didn't for most of the year. And then who was the third one? Landry? Landry, who I really like down in Miami. I love that kid. I think he's hella talented, and I really hope the coaching change helps him, even though they were kind of feeding him the ball anyway. But Landry, he's not a first-round pick, I don't think. I can't remember right now.
Paul Witt says, ask Nagler, which, you know, I don't know. If you don't know this, it's fine, okay?
Mm-hmm. But anyway, wait. Let me just wrap this up real quick.
Who holds the NFL record for most wins by a rookie wide receiver?
That's fantastic. That's great. I'm going to go with Randy Moss. and to declare here right now, we have invented wide receiver wins with a Z. That's good. I like that. Thanks for that. But just to wrap that up, it's like, no, I understand like the whole like, oh, it's not that impressive thing, and you can cite stats and et cetera, but in this offense, asking, you know, a rookie wide receiver to come in and do what Ty Montgomery does, I mean, it's rare and it's few and far between. And we go look at Randall Cobb, a second-round pick who came in and obviously had flash moments his rookie year and made some big plays. But that's not the norm. Like, what these guys are doing is impressive.
Yeah.
You know, what Ty Montgomery is doing is very impressive. And I'm not saying he's Randy Moss. But I will agree with you that he is further ahead than Adams was at this point last year. And that's encouraging because of the fact that they will get Adams back at some point. And having all that talent at the receiving positions is going to be fun to watch. But none of that shit will matter if they can't run the football. And I know it's funny. Mike again today, or maybe Aaron too, referenced that coming into last week, they were number three running the football in the NFL. They were ranked third. Well, yeah, because they were ahead by a lot in the fourth quarter and they ran the ball.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's so misleading about it. It's like,
well,
that's great.
Well,
you know, you salted away,
I remember
you,
us talking.
You salted away Kansas City, like you ran the ball there. You ran in the fourth quarter against San Francisco. You know, it's like, yeah, you ran it in the fourth quarter against the Seahawks.
Yeah, but that's how it should be.
I know, I agree.
We should be.
But I'm just saying.
We should score a touchdown in the first drive, and then we should run the ball the rest of the game.
Why run when you can win? I know, I agree. But it's just funny how, like, that's used as a, look, we're running the ball fine. But, yeah, not when the game is in doubt in regards to, you know, you're trying to generate points.
Yeah.
In the first half. Like, that's where the problem is. So I just find that interesting, whether they're hiding behind that. I mean, it's, you know, kind of misleading. But that's just me. Let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball. Everybody's favorite side as of the last 2 weeks.
This last week, I mean, they were all defense all the time.
They were pretty hot.
I just want to say, need to apologize to someone.
Oh, wait, whoa.
No, not
whoa.
You, Nagler.
No, I know this, but I'm just any apology here is just like, whoa.
I want to apologize for doubting Sam Shields. Sam Shields had a game last Sunday.
Yeah, he did.
He didn't allow a catch against him.
Correct.
No, wait. He did not allow a catch And it was so funny. When you watch Inside the NFL, you watch the highlight, and you watch, like, they showed two amazing pass defenses. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of threw out that, oh, yeah, well, nobody caught a catch against him. That's a shutdown corner.
Yeah, for one game, anyway.
Yeah. Sam Shields, I believe, is ascending.
Ascending?
Yes.
Ascending player, Sam Shields.
Ascending.
I like it. Ascending. I like it. The Corey Banky ascending label has been... has been applied.
I hope that's not a jinx.
Oh, well, I doubt it. He'll get burned on it for a 50 yarder.
I think he's probably one of the most underrated Packers. And I, you know, it's funny because usually I'm all for the underrated guys.
Yeah.
And early this season, I wasn't a big believer.
Well, it was easy after that first game.
It was easy to not believe.
It was tough to watch that first
and
game.
And now I think he's so underrated that you just don't realize. That's amazing.
How well he's playing. He played well in the Seahawks game. Kind of played out of his mind last week, but his interception was hella impressive, the way he accelerated, undercut the route, and jumped up to get the ball, high-pointed it. I mean, it was just that was a sight to behold.
And Quentin Rollins.
Rollins, hello. Come on. How about this kid? I mean, the first one, the pick six is kind of a gimme.
That's
attributed to the pass rush.
Yes,
I mean,
of
that's
course.
All pass
of course.
Rush there.
Yeah, because he's trying to throw it really
hard. That's a terrible
hard.
Throw. And it's a, just,
yeah,
you know,
he gets it, nailed
it's
as it
almost
throws.
Right to him, yeah. Et cetera, et cetera. However, we've seen those balls drop before. We've seen that play not get made. So kudos to the rookie grabbing that and running it in. And then, by the second interception, that was great. That was a real read and a break on the ball. If only he hadn't slipped, he would have had another pick six, and he would have been, like, a huge one, too. And I think that's kind of in the back of his head when he's trying to, oh, yeah. But... great play. Just a great play. And that's a bounce back from allowing the big play previous, you know, that even got them down there in the first place.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, Rollins kicking it, loving it, loving all these young guns. I mean, Demarius Randall's played well, too. We haven't even seen Gunter get out there. And Gunter's just insurance at this point. I love the fact that they could bring this guy up off the bench at any time if they want.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, it's funny. You talk about the pass rush causing that pick six. It's funny, watching the Chargers game on Monday night, heartbreaking loss for the Chargers, their last second against the Steelers. I was shocked at how difficult the Chargers made it look in regards to trying to drive the field on the Steelers and score points. I mean, they were stuck at 7 points their opening drive. It was kind of like the Packers. Their opening drive was great, right down the field, touchdown. And then they just kept, stubbing their toe and kind of, wasting possessions. And then it kind of all of a sudden was a game in the fourth quarter. And then they lost. And it kind of reminded me of the Packers. And without kind of the defense that the Packers have enjoyed, the Chargers have a defense. It's injured and it's kind of all over the map. Ingram's finally back and playing really well, so I wouldn't discount him. But it's just funny to me. And I know a lot of people were looking at the offensive line because I know this. Because I got so many tweets on Monday night. I counted at least 20 and then I stopped. But at least 20 tweets telling me that the Packers have to be licking their chops about the Chargers' offensive line. And I get that to an extent. Definitely, especially at home at Lambeau Field to get them there. Now, the caveat there is that the Chargers' offensive line is totally decimated, or it was on Monday night.
Yeah.
There's no telling who's going to be back for the Packers game. So, it might not quite be the opening of the floodgates, so to speak, on Phillip Rivers that it was on Monday night at times. Yes, there is definitely some blood in the water in regards to what they've put on tape now. And you got to think Dom and Clay and company will be indeed licking their chops, so to speak, come third down on Sunday.
I didn't watch the game on Monday, so I have nothing to contribute.
It's quite all right.
It's the Chargers.
That's why I do it. I do it so you don't have to.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Hey, that's what I'm all about. I'm all about your needs. Two guys who, just because last week I talked up, or a couple weeks ago, I think I talked up Nate Palmer, who I said was playing really well, even though he's just a guy. Corey took issue with that. Corey said, why are you talking about a guy who's just a guy, even if he's playing his heart out and, just giving his life for the team, Who needs that? Well, I want to do that again. I'm going to make this a weekly segment, a weekly moment where I talk about a guy or a couple guys who are playing above their heads, guys who we're never going to talk about in regards to headlines or game-changing plays or even, you know, big plays, anything like that. But guys that are played well and probably didn't get mentioned anywhere else.
Yeah.
And this week, I got to point out two. I got to talk about Chris Banjo, and I talk about Joe Thomas. Now, actually, Joe Thomas probably is a little more noticed just because he did get his hand on the ball that ended up being intercepted by Ha Ha Clinton Dix. Obviously, that was a great play. It was a good break. It was a bad throw by Nick Foles, but a good play by Joe Thomas. You'd like to see him catch it. But overall, as a dime linebacker, he's really making a difference. He's allowing them to rush Clay a little more, and it's great to see that. And then for Chris Banjo, Sean Richardson declared, you know, he's on the inactive list. He's sitting there on the sideline, so they're throwing Chris Banjo in there. And Banjo's playing well. He played well against Kansas City. He's played well against St. Louis. I'm excited for this kid. You know, he almost had what looked like could have been a pick six against Kansas City, and then he more than held his own against St. Louis. So that's a guy who's kind of bounced around the periphery of the roster for a while. And
he always would get you excited in training camp.
Yes, he would. Exactly.
And then you
and then you just kind of disappear and you never see him again. But he's been given some opportunities here the last couple weeks. And I tell you what, I mean, another guy, you just plug in and things still work. Because that wasn't always the case.
No.
There were Packer fans, I don't need to tell you how many years have we watched guys go down on the defensive side of the ball and everything, even one guy, just one guy, and everything falls apart.
Well, and you know what? I'm glad you mentioned this because I wanted to talk about this. You know, last week it was really interesting, the coverage of Lindy Infante.
Yes.
And it was very
RIP.
It was very fascinating. RIP. It's very fascinating to see a guy who completely effing failed at his job, had one barely good season, and how that affects the memories. It's right. Like, it's just interesting because, like, people like CeeDee Angeli who try to be positive, to see them talk. Like, the only thing that I have, like Lindy Infante taught me how much I want to win, right? Because we lost so much.
Right.
And he was a terrible coach. He was a terrible hire.
He was a terrible head coach.
He was a terrible hire. He was a terrible coach. And it was a terrible leadership that kept him in his job as long as he had it.
Right.
Because at least Bob Harlan had the guts to pull.
Well, to hire Ron Wolf. And
no,
Ron
had the guts in between when we had the coach for 1 year.
Oh, you mean Ray Rhodes?
Ray Rhodes.
Right.
Had the guts and the fortitude to say, this was a bad decision, let's not do this.
Yeah, but that was Ron's call. I mean, Bob signed off on it, but that's Ron's call.
But still.
I hear you. I bet
before Ron Wolf,
acknowledging your mistakes.
That right. Exactly. It took us 7 years?
I don't know.
A long time.
Now, I will say this.
Okay, and Bob McGinn. Wait, I'm not done.
You go ahead.
Bob McGinn wrote a piece, The Season That Almost Was.
Yep.
You know what the season that almost was? 2011, 1997, 2014 to 15. That season that he's referencing that Lindy Infante had.
Yeah. You know what you sound like right now?
It was a letdown.
You know what you sound like?
A letdown.
You sound like a spoiled Packer fan. Where were you during that season, the season that almost was that Bob was referencing? Where were you living?
Los Angeles.
If you lived in Wisconsin,
hold on. I went to a game that season with my grandfather.
I have no doubt. You always go to games. You go to games every year.
And we still watch the game.
I understand. That season in Wisconsin, like living in Wisconsin, I'll never forget it. I'll never forget going to my friend's house and his mom, who didn't care about the Packers, she couldn't care less about the Packers. She had a picture that she had clipped out of the paper. The Post-Crescent, of Don Majkowski and Sterling Sharp. Sterling Sharp was on the bench, and this was probably after a touchdown pass, and they were like, they had just done this, right? And they were grabbing, and Majkowski was down looking at him, and they were smiling. And she put that on her refrigerator. And I remember walking into Justin, my buddy Justin's house, and being like, did you put that there? And he's like, no, my mom did. I was like, your mom did? She's like, yeah. She's totally into the Packers now. Like, that was that season. It was the season where, oh my God, they might be good. And I get...
In spite of a head coach that was a complete failure.
He was a very good offensive coach. He just wasn't a head coach. We've seen that time immemorial in the NFL. That happens.
But in today's NFL, and even in Lombardi's
NFL. Oh my God, today's NFL, he wouldn't have lasted 2 years. No. There's no doubt. But I will say this. When you had gone through the 70s and the 80s and then got to Lindy Infante and that year that almost was, let me tell you, dude, that was freaking awesome. And even when they didn't make the playoffs, I was beaming with pride about that team. I was the happiest I had been forever.
Dude, I have every set of Sheriff playing cards that my family would give me, right?
Awesome.
That have some of the worst players in Packer history that I worshipped. Okay, you have to understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah,
and, I might be being a little mean. I just think it's very fascinating.
No. I don't think you're being
mean. No, I'm being told on the chat I'm being mean. I think it's fascinating to see a coach...
I don't think you're being mean at all.
...who was not successful with the Green Bay Packers. And actually, there's a lesson to be learned, I hope, from the organization, from the Lindy Infante and the that whole era, that I honestly think is not being learned and not really understood.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think the thinking then, when Baratz was in charge and whatever, it's funny. I think the thinking then was that Infante was going to be what Marvin Lewis... Cincinnati's hoping Marvin Lewis is turning into this year, a guy who they really felt comfortable with, they won some games with, they were really disappointed at times with, but now you see the Bengals here in 2015 kind of maybe hopefully turning a corner in regards to becoming a complete football team. And I think just at that time in Green Bay, they just hadn't won. They hadn't won in so long. I mean, it had been so damn long. The only time they got to the playoffs is when there was a strike.
Yeah.
And they didn't play any freaking games.
And everybody on the chat, STFU, okay? The guys, I'm not being harsh, I'm not being mean, I'm being a realist. The guy's record as a Green Bay Packer head coach was 36-60.
And that is a stat. Head coach wins and losses.
36-60. He was allowed to stay in his job for 6, not 7 seasons, which was way too long. R.I.P., but you know what? I'm sorry. That failure.
Man, never doubt Banky when he says he keeps it real. Because I can't quibble with what you're saying there. I can't. I totally get where you're coming from. But at the same time, like I said, I get where the kind of emotion comes from, the feeling that the season that almost was. Like, I get it. I totally get it. I totally connect to it. Totally buy it. But I also understand exactly what you're saying. Now that we've gone totally off the rails here in regards to the script, what else do you want to talk?
The script was done.
Well, was it? Okay, good.
It was done.
Wait.
No,
wait.
It's time for something.
Is it time? Okay, good. Well, because we have anything anyway, so good. Do it.
This week in the Packer blogosphere.
That's right. This week in the Packers blogosphere, the return of that venerable series. Corey, this week, you know what I got?
What do you got?
It's not so much, I guess this is really stretching it, but it's not really in the Packers blogosphere, but I got to take issue with something. I got to take issue with something going on in the NFL today.
Okay.
And it's not going to be about D'Angelo Williams not being allowed to wear pink for his mom, although that is ridiculous and absurd.
What? I missed that.
Yeah, it's been all the talk the last 2 days because D'Angelo Williams with the Steelers, Monday Night Football, which you didn't watch, that's why you don't know about it.
The head coach of the St. Louis Rams can wear pink glasses?
Well, because that's NFL sanctioned, of course. So D'Angelo Williams, running back for the Steelers, his mom died of breast cancer, and he wanted to wear pink. I guess all year. He wanted to do something all year on his uniform to honor his mother. And the NFL said no. And then comes out today that, one of the defensive linemen for the Steelers had a message printed on his eye black. And he was fined. And it turns out he had put the message there to honor his father.
What was the message?
I ironed something. I can't remember exactly. It was two words. It wasn't offensive. It was, totally not, no offensive thing at all.
You can't put words on your face.
No.
But you can have a tattoo.
Yeah.
On your face. What if you have a tattoo that says F-U-C-K on your face?
I guess you have to get it removed. I don't know. I don't know. Too bad Chad Ochocinco isn't still in the league.
I'm what? Sure
he'd test this out.
This makes no sense.
But so, you know, like, okay, so all that, you know, yes, they're a corporation and they're terrible and they put these players into little boxes and they say, you know, play in our box. You're not allowed to do anything else. No individualism allowed. Go make us billions and we'll give you a small piece of the pie in return. Okay, fine. For most of you.
Yeah.
Some superstars, you'll get paid a little more. But, you know, comparative to the money you make us and the popularity of our sport that you bring us, you get very little in return and you have to do these ridiculous things we say. I get all that. It's like, I hate it. I'm done talking about it. I've been talking about it for years. I'm done. But it did lead to a discussion in another arena. This is kind of coming off last week when I think it was Stedman Bailey for the Rams was flagged, and maybe he was fined, for you know, using the ball as a prop when he scored a touchdown. He put the ball on the ground and laid on it and used it as a pillow.
It's ridiculous.
Okay, can I just say, for a league that is dealing with players that are coming to grips with the fact that they are going to, a good number of them, deal with the repercussions of playing football for the rest of their lives. And yes, they have all signed up. There is no one on that football field that we watch on Sundays who is naive to these,
it's volunteer.
These problems.
It's optional.
These issues.
Yep.
They are doing it of their own free will. I have no quarrel with that. I understand that aspect. However, for you to say that your Sunday or your precious game, your integrity that you claim you have to guard with all of your might, the integrity of the game is of paramount importance. And that precious integrity is going to be defiled by an NFL player showing joy in the end zone is the biggest pile of manure I can possibly imagine. The idea that one of the main reasons they made things illegal in regards to group celebrations were because of things like the fun bunch that the Washington team used to do back in the day in the 80s. Guys would get in a circle, they would all high five, and one time, a group of, I think it was Cowboys, came and like were objecting and were like trying to tear them apart.
Oh, yeah,
like,
I remember that.
And it was, quote-unquote, almost a fight, which is adorable if you go back and watch the replay of that actual moment because it's like the furthest thing away from a fight. But, so, oh, we can't have group celebrations because it might encourage them to fight. Never mind that there are fights every freaking summer in every joint practice.
Yeah.
Maybe even some single practices. Every summer, we're inundated with guys fighting on the football field. That happens. Never mind the fact that your whole product is men running into other men, hurting each other. A vast amount of the game is spent trying to hurt / injure the other guy across from you. But we can't have some pushing and shoving after a touchdown celebration.
Well,
it might not look good on television.
There is a very, very large disconnect in the NFL right now when it comes to the celebrations and the things that are disciplined versus the Hardys of the world that are just allowed to
keep playing football,
keep doing what they're doing, and white rich men make excuses for what they're doing with no regard to the world that we live in.
Yep, because they live in the bubble of the NFL. And we're all complicit in that regard because we all keep watching. We're all going to root for our team. So I understand, again, we are complicit.
Yeah.
But and this brings me
this
back
to my
point.
The show is complicit.
Oh, absolutely. Our existence, our
We've
being
had Katie
here talking
Nolan
into
on,
micro-
but that doesn't make us any less complicit. Katie Nolan is complicit to some degree. We're
Absolutely.
All complicit, watching,
Absolutely.
Being a part of the thing.
I agree.
Churning I agree. The butter. We are all complicit.
Absolutely. But that brings me back to my point. So we've got this whole thing. We've got the Greg Hardys of the world out there, right? We've got them playing football. We got them sacking quarterbacks. Everything's fine. But God forbid Terrell Owens gets a thing of popcorn and puts it in his face mask. God forbid Joe Horn grabs a cell phone and pretends to make a call. God forbid someone has some fucking fun. I'm so sick of it. I'm so sick of it being a bad thing for guys to show joy on the football field. And someone in my Twitter today says, that's what the locker room is for. Get the fuck out of here with that.
No, the locker room.
You're not allowed to show joy on the field, but you're supposed to save it for the locker room. Get the fuck out of here with that.
No, the locker room is not for female reporters, Aaron.
Yeah, well, apparently not in Indianapolis anyway. All right, I'm sorry. I went off the deep end there, but God.
And scene. Actually, what I was going to talk.
I'm just sick of it.
What I was going to talk about in addition to that was this weekend.
Hey, Todd, speaking of fun.
I will be.
How's that for a segue?
In Green Bay. Mm-hmm. Yes, people. Green Bay.
Woo!
This weekend, throwback weekend, Saturday night at the Green Bay Distillery.
Get there.
Sunday, Chargers game. If you can find me at the tailgate, I haven't even told Brad Stillmank this, but he's going to agree with me. If you can find me at the tailgate, I will give you one, and I mean one only. Maybe two, if I like you. It just depends how nice you are to me. Wisco Disco beer. Yes, you may have, if you can find me.
Do it, people.
A free,
the hunt is on.
A free Wisco Disco beer this weekend, throwback weekend. Let me know you're coming on Twitter. It's going to be fun. I'm really excited to go to Wisconsin on Friday.
Wish I could be there.
It's great times. Flying into Milwaukee, driving to Green Bay,
sounds
having
awesome,
a nice
dude.
Dinner on Friday night, Friday fish fry in Green Bay with the fam.
God, that sounds so good.
Saturday, go to Stillmank Brewery. Maybe my aunt, my great aunt told me there's this thing going on in Green Bay that she's going to on Friday. It's like, and I'm not exactly sure what it is, but basically they it's like a farm and there's a farm to table restaurant, but it's all part
out.
Of one. And they actually bring cows. They milk the cows and make the cheese curds right after they milk
get
the cows,
out.
Dude.
Get
and so
out.
You can get like that is like the freshest damn
you
cheese
need,
curds.
You need ever. To film that because I got to see.
Because that's ridiculous.
That's amazing.
So I think we're gonna go to that Saturday and then Saturday night distillery. Sunday we got a late game so everybody can get wasted Saturday night. Don't have to worry about missing the game. And yeah,
I mean, really, that's what it's all about.
And then hopefully we're leaving. Look, Aaron's rant was so big that Gilbert Brown moved behind him.
Sorry, Gilbert.
Gilbert, no, turn the other way. Uh-huh. Gilbert, like, moved. The Gravedigger, like, moved a little bit. He's like, what's going on here, guys?
Hey guys.
So, yeah, we're going to leave 6-0, hopefully coming back.
That's what I'm talking about.
And then we'll have a bye week, and then we will see you next week.
Let's do it, people. That's it. That's it for this week's episode of Packer Transplants. We'd like to thank everyone who connected with us on the live chat. You guys really helped make this a unique fan experience. You guys are the best, really. It's why Corey and I are here. Enjoy throwback weekend. And like Corey said, we'll see you next week. Corey, what's the prediction for Sunday?
60-0.
All right, I'll take the Packers 31-21. There you go. Go Pack, go.
Take the high road when something like this happens. Is there any positive in terms of motivation for your guys, how ticked off they are about how this played out, any of that can be used in any positive way whatsoever?
I'm not in the mood for drama tonight, Jason, okay? I appreciate that.
What do you think you told the critics tonight?